Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Girls and guys from different thighs, it's the Football Ramble, ladies and gentlemen. Good to have you here. My name's Marcus, and I've got three beautiful babes with me. Jim.
Hello.
Pete.
People say that this song is sexist because I'm asking all the girls to rub on their breastises.
And Luke.
All right.
Arsenal recently honoured three of their greats by unveiling statues of them around the ground. If you had a statue, gentlemen, of you erected in a football context, where would it be, and what would the statue depict? Jim.
Probably my greatest achievement on a football pitch was recently when we played in a game and I scored a goal.
Right.
That was a good goal as well.
Yeah. Player. So probably there, that pitch.
Chelsea's
reserve?
Tooting and Mitcham.
Yeah, Pete and I were involved in the creation of
that. I think I shouldered it at one point, like Balotelli.
75% of the Ramble involved in the making that game.
Indeed, yeah. But yeah, no, so I'd have to have it there by default. And what I'd like to have a statue of me doing would be me doing kick-ups, because I'm not very good at them. But I'd also like to set the sort of the person making the statue the challenge of keeping the ball in the air.
Yeah, that's good.
And maybe you'd have to have like air coming out of my foot to maybe keep it up somehow.
Magnets.
Hope it's not very windy.
It's not a bronze statue, is it?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
It's this poor guy that has to do it.
Yep.
Fair dues.
Pete?
I would probably have me, it would be near the toilets, and it would be me squeezing past the men in the urinal. Because you know, football matches, it's like, it's not even a queue, it's just people squeezing around. Yeah. So it would just be me, not making eye contact, looking at a urinal, see if I can squeeze in there, see if it's a 7-man urinal or an 8-man urinal.
Yeah.
Or maybe just open mouthed agog at the prices of a burger at the Keith Houchin stand at Wembley.
Or just your head as a urinal.
Say again?
Maybe just your head as a urinal.
That is dirty, sort of, Jim. Yeah. Well, I will not have that.
I quite like that idea, actually.
What, men urinating in my mouth?
So you obviously didn't have a good career in your imagination then.
No, but these are my footballing moments. They're things I remember from football matches.
Right. Yeah, Luke?
Mine would probably be outside the Fratton End.
Yeah, of course.
Sort of depicting my famous, now legendary, Perineum goal.
Again, it's a difficult pose to do because you're gonna have to be sideways.
I'll leave it to the expert.
I was going
to
say,
my understanding of the question is I'm not designing or building it.
Yeah, I'm saying this is a positive thing. It's just going to be more memorable.
Let the statuista worry about that.
It'd be better than the Ted Bates one outside Southampton.
Much better. Much better.
That is the benchmark of a bad statue.
Absolutely.
I would have a statue of me outside Wembley, and because it'd be such an amazing career, I'd have won loads of Ballon d'Ors, and it would just be a statue of me. And I would go for the same sort of statue feat of trying to have things floating in the air, just juggling loads of Ballon d'Ors. quite arrogantly. Yeah.
With a very arrogant look, I would hope.
Yeah, maybe like a little trophy cabinet, you just popping another one on.
One of the most self-indulgent opening questions we've done. I think we all agree on that.
And Jim's got the point.
Yeah.
Because he actually said something that actually happened.
Yeah.
Through default, I think, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm sure Pete has been awkward in the toilet before.
Yeah, that is true. Actually.
I know,
Some of my finest moments. In your eyes.
Moving on swiftly to Arsenal. And let's talk a little bit about the statues. Thierry Henry, Tony Adams and Herbert Chapman.
Ashley Cole's got to be furious.
Where is that Tony Adams one going to reside? Because even I've got designs on where to put the traffic bollards on his outstretched arms.
Yeah.
I don't know where any.
Is it going to be outside? Or where I can get at them?
Thierry Henry got a little bit emotional.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure he did.
Yeah. It's actually a good one of him doing the knee slide celebration.
Hopefully we can have the Adams one just on the pitch. Yeah. Kind of help us out.
Be faster than Mertesacker, wouldn't it?
Yeah, quite a better line, wouldn't it? Yeah. And Herbert Chapman, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Wasn't Ian Wright reportedly put out that he didn't get one?
I didn't see
but
that.
There was talk around it. There was talk around it.
I wouldn't be surprised if he was considered for one. So I imagine in his head he would have thought.
Or Wenger. Wenger could be considered for one.
Yeah. No, Wenger now, thinking. Though, would that not be a bit self-indulgent?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
I'm sure one will happen.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Apparently, David Moyes asked Thierry Henry if he fancied a game for Everton sometime soon. Took the opportunity.
Might as well.
Yeah, why not?
Don't ask, you don't get.
He looks quite a lot like Jimmy McNulty from The Wire, David Moyes, I think. A sort of hard and Scottish version. And I think that's the sort of opportunity McNulty would go for. So.
Did anyone see, like, sort of Henry, sort of not that enthusiastically clapping Robert Van Persie's goal?
Yeah.
He's going to beat my record. He's definitely.
Yeah. look at that.
Yeah, well done, Robert Van Persie. Well done.
Ridiculous, you knob. Yeah. It was a superb goal, wasn't it?
One of the goals of the season, would you say?
He said afterwards that there was a sort of little element of kind of hope to it, which just gives the impression that it was just all instinct, and he's just that good at the moment.
Yeah, he was 2 feet off the ground when he hit it as well. It was just kind of wow, yeah. Wow, technique.
Yeah, bend on it as well. It was going to take something like that as well, because Everton were just not. They weren't having it. They were just
miserly.
Just resolute.
But another win for Arsenal. They're up to fourth, do you know?
No, it's incredible.
One thing that was pointed out, one thing that I noticed watching that was that, I'll tell you who's got away with having terrible hair for a long time. Yeah. Phil Neville. Fiercely committed to the frosted tip highlights.
Yeah, that's
at the
true.
Age of his early 30s.
Yeah, unbecoming of a man of his age.
Yeah.
It's a very 90s thing.
Yeah. He's just stuck at it. I mean, he must be mid 30s now. He's stuck at frosted tip highlights. I mean, tell me another man of that age range who'll do that.
Tim Lovejoy.
Yeah, exactly.
Jimbo, you've got to be happy with Arsenal getting up there. But Andre Santos has picked up an injury and been out for 3 months.
That is a real blow because he's mental, which is as entertaining as it is good that he's actually, you know, he'd put some really good performances in. He started to look really solid, look like a really sort of good acquisition. I mean, I think Gibbs isn't going to be back anytime soon, so I imagine Vermaelen will probably play out there. And obviously, he's one of our best players, so we need him in his best position. But it is a shame. But yeah, what I was most impressed about is the fact that it was a ground out win for Arsenal. You know, there's always talk that, you know, the best teams win when they're not playing badly. When they are playing badly. Yeah. We found a way to win, whereas before we would have just drawn that game or even screwed it up and lost it. And it's just the belief's obviously there. Yeah. Clearly, it does make such a difference. Managers talk about it all the time, but it's you just trust Arsenal again when you watch them. You're not as jittery, which I'm sure is.
But we all kind of saw this happening. Nobody ever saw them sort of bottom half of the table.
But people were saying that, but those people were just, obviously it was just knee jerk, wasn't it? It's just, you know, people always say it when teams have a bad start. Oh, I can just see them like finishing bottom half. I think they're over.
Well, in the
Liverpool
same way
get it every year.
Well, yeah, and in the same way that you'll probably see Spurs sort of slipping down a little bit. It's just one of those things. You know, you go on runs and.
I think that everyone's talking about how reliant they are on Van Persie, but one of the things that was highlighted in the midweek. With how much they'd be miss Chesney if he got injured.
Absolutely, yeah.
Fabianski first of all, but then Minoni, that was an absolute comedy show.
Yeah, where he tried to volley it. I don't think he thought that he was in the. He thought he was outside the box, didn't he?
But
you should know where you are.
Know that.
But it was
about 3 or 4 feet inside his.
He was so far inside the box, I thought he assumed it was a back pass.
Yeah,
that's what he can do.
It was shaky all game, and Fabianski looked shaky beforehand as well. But it's very, very true. Yeah,
and it's funnier because for Minoni, because he looks so hard,
he does, so solid.
Vito Minoni, obviously hard.
Yeah,
yeah. No, it's
so they rely on Chesney a lot, don't they?
Absolutely. But I mean, he is the number one though. It's nice to have that as well. And almost because it was a game that didn't matter. It's just you could look back at that with all the goalkeeping errors and go.
Yeah,
but doesn't really happen anymore.
But the number two position is quite a difficult position to fulfil, goalkeeper wise, because there's only one seat on the bench. There's only one position you're only ever going to get on for a couple of matches a season.
Well, we've talked about this in the past, and the general consensus when we discussed it before was that you either need to get a real young up and coming goalkeeper,
or Peggy or Pixad,
or a keeper who's a lot older, someone like a Cudicini who's not that bothered about
that's
much,
right,
but
right.
But
they're hard to find.
Massively hard.
Yeah, while we're on the subject of Arsenal as well, there's talk a couple of weeks ago now, but this is still kind of resonating a little with Wenger sort of saying he'd sort of discuss his future at the end of the season. A lot of people saying, oh, he's going to leave. In the same interview, he actually said, I've never even considered leaving Arsenal. That bit was conveniently clipped out. It's like, oh, Wenger's leaving, he's considering his future.
Yeah.
just
it's almost as if the press is trying to mislead us.
Yeah.
L'Equipe, isn't it L'Equipe?
No, I
think it was, yeah, actually.
They always have the exclusives.
Yeah, they do. Mm. They do. But the press would never do such a terrible thing. Manchester United beat Wolves 4-1. Phil Jones said this made up to all the supporters who travelled to Switzerland and saw them get eliminated from the Champions League. I don't think it is.
I'm not sure that's your call, Phil.
A routine home win against a lower half Premier League
side. It's absolutely staggering, isn't it, that they've gone out of the Champions League. It's such a weak group as well. I mean, Benfica, obviously, that's a test, but they should be getting through that.
Actually, mentioned in the press there, they must have had a little bit of a smug look on their faces, because after the 2-2 home draw against Benfica, someone did ask for Ferguson, or he mentioned something like, isn't it funny to see the two Manchester clubs struggling in Europe, and he stormed down and went, struggling, you must be mad, you know.
Right, okay. They paid the price for being so experimental in the first opening group sort of games, you know. Mm. And they really let the cat, well, they really let it slip against Basel at home as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
That was outrageous.
Just ridiculous.
But Ferguson described the Europa League as more of a punishment.
Man United really boil my piss. They've already ruined the FA Cup for me.
Right.
You know, just deal with it. It's in the rules of the Champions League. If you leave the Champions League early, you're going to go into the Europa League. Just piss off, Alex.
I think Ferguson is dealing with it. I think he is sort of saying, well,
isn't it the only trophy he hasn't won?
Might be. It seems really weird.
But it's such a bad thing to denigrate. Everett was piping up as well. There's no point denigrating a cup that you...
Everett said it was embarrassing to be in.
I'm with them both.
It is, but... Important teams are still in that competition. It's just they're selling themselves short.
Like they're noisy neighbours.
Yeah. It seems weird to think of Manchester United in the Europa League, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
It is weird, but as Pete says, you can't just suddenly go off. You've got to be like, right, well, this is where we are. Obviously, we want to be in the Champions League, but we're here now, so let's try and win.
It's not like
they're
going great guns in the Premier League massively, are they? They're grinding out 1-0s and 2-0s, but, you know, Wayne Rooney's not firing.
They don't care about it, do they? They really don't care. It's the same way that, you know, the Carling Cup, if they go out, I don't mind. But with Europa League, it's the travel involved, isn't it? It's extra games. It's actually going to have a detrimental effect on the things they do want to win.
True, but you can give young players and all European experience.
City will do that as well.
And that's invaluable, surely.
Yeah, of course it is, yeah. The thing about Everett, though, I mean, he should be looking a bit closer to home if he's annoyed about it, because he's not been great.
No. Yeah, exactly.
Someone was suggesting that it's because he's played so many games. He's had no competition for the place. He's just played every game. He's so solid. You know, even when United have played like an experimental lineup, you'll often see Everett start.
Yeah.
So maybe he's just a bit burnt out, but he's not been great.
And we'll see Michael Owen a bit more every cloud. Exactly.
Yeah. He's injured, though, isn't he?
Oh, true. Yeah. Manchester City also went out of the Champions League, and. They beat Bayern Munich, though, in their last game.
Mm.
But it wasn't enough because Napoli got the points away to Villarreal.
Love in Napoli in Europe.
They're great, aren't they? Jens Lehmann was working for German television and was commenting on Manchester City. And he said, Manchester City play very, very boring football. They make their opponents fall asleep with a lot of possession. the way they play here is the way any amateur team plays, only not on such good grass. City at top of the league, roaring away,
isn't it? And they've been smashing teams as well. It's not like they've not been playing boring football. They've been great to watch.
He didn't finish there though, Jimbo. He started having a dig at the fans and the stadium. He said there was no life in the stadium. It was dead. The fans are so quiet. You have to say though that they have not really got anything to get excited about here.
He fed at the Emirates.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And he finished up by saying, "We don't want to see Manchester City in the Champions League."
Who's we?
That's the royal we, isn't it?
But it's harsh on City because although
it's very harsh.
They had a very tough group, and 10 points would have been enough. I mean, 9 times out of 10, that's enough. We said at the beginning of the season, get those 10 points and you're normally through, and it's a shame they didn't manage to make it.
I don't know.
I don't know if it is a shame, not to sort of not have anything against City, but I do think it's kind of an encouraging thing that they've not been able to sort of buy a place in the last 16. European football is still difficult enough that a young kind of new side, even with sort of very expensively assembled stars, will still find it difficult, because the standard is so high. We see it every year when it gets to the knockout stages. The football is just incredible. A lot of people say it's better than the World Cup, and I just think it is a good thing soul of the game that they're going to have to work a little bit harder, because they'll be back, you know.
It's an interesting group in a lot of ways, because you had City, who were first timers, and Napoli who obviously were as well, and you had the experience of Villarreal who had fallen from grace quite dramatically. But it just seemed to be that Napoli adapted a little bit more quickly to Champions League football, and Man City's undoing was in a way, their opening game when they didn't beat Napoli at home, mm-hmm. and that's come down back to haunt them, really.
It shows you how fine the margins can be.
Oh, yeah,
if you get a group where the teams are quite well balanced.
I don't think Mancini's been beyond the quarterfinal as a manager.
No, I think I do wonder if his sort of European failures will come back with City and could... Could be a problem down the line.
I don't necessarily pay the closest of attention in the earlier when the draw comes out. It is seeded, isn't it? The Champions League. So if they come first,
that's right.
Rather than second or third, you know.
Previous tournaments. So let's get back to the Premier League though, where Norwich beat Newcastle 4-2.
Crazy game, isn't it?
Another loss.
Grant Holt
with two-headed goals.
Yeah. Those neck muscle.
Goal tractor. He's brilliant.
Yeah. Holtomania.
He's got an excellent record. I think he's got 51 goals in 89 league starts for Norwich.
Yes. That's an excellent that was his 50th league goal at the club that he scored.
Yeah. Okay, right.
On the weekend. And Morrison with a header as well.
Yeah. Mm. They are two hard men, aren't
but
they?
Very
that
slow.
Very tough forward
line. I mean, they were mainly from set pieces and you know, we didn't have a centre-back. They put Perch and Simpson in, which was weird because, you know, and we had two right-backs at left-back and right-back.
That's right.
A mess. And weirdly, like, he didn't bring Kadar in. Must be a situation where Pardew doesn't fancy him. We just don't have any centre-backs. Hopefully Colaccini is going to be back for next weekend.
I think Lambert and Norwich will have a lot of credit because Lambert obviously set them up and said, look, they're going to have shortages at the back. Mm. Let's just bombard them.
Yeah.
And they did
absolutely.
That.
We didn't get out of our 18-yard box for like a good 20-minute spell.
And Houlihan's goal was brilliant because he didn't even know it happened.
Denver Barr was just phenomenal again. Two great goals, two strikers' goals. The touch on the first one just to because it looks like it's all goodbye the first time you see that because it's really brilliantly
the
weighted
turned
pass,
run that he does it, like he sort of runs along with the back foot Defoe-esque
it's all one motion, you know, that finish when he's got like two or three things to do within it. And the second one as well, he took it really well when he sort of shuffled his feet, just really quick thinking.
It's pleasing to see him use both feet quite very adeptly.
I mean how old's Denver Barr, do you know?
I don't actually know. He's not of age. He's not yet 26.
He's got a bright future. He really has. Yeah. I mean, I think he'll be around in the Premier League for a long time. He might be one of those players where they just creep up on you for a bit as being amazing.
But like Louis Saha.
Saha could have been that, I think, if he'd stayed sort of fit. But Dwight York is the sort of player where you think, oh, good player, scores quite a lot. And it's only sort of when he gets a move to a bigger club you realise quite how good he was.
Yeah.
I think Barr could it be in that bracket one day if he carries on like he's going.
And Newcastle United also had their Christmas party on the weekend. It looked brilliant.
It looked officially licensed costume-wise. Yeah. Every costume was clearly off the peg.
Was it organised fun?
Right, it was very organised fun. Sammy Amiobi was the one who posted all. He was dressed as SpongeBob. Like an awful costume, a genuinely awful
costume. Colaccini is Sonic.
As if I could love him anymore. I bloody love that fella.
Gutierrez is a Smurf.
Although, to be fair, if he's called in sick at work, he should be allowed to go to the Christmas party, Colaccini. So
the interesting thing about the...
it's not like real work.
Well, it was up in Glasgow, weirdly. I don't know what the reasons were for that.
Banned from Newcastle. Banned from the big market.
Well, the interesting...
Over the border,
you can
do it.
Laws, licensing laws.
Since Andy Carroll.
You compare it to the Manchester United party. I don't know if you saw any of the pictures there. That looked one dull affair.
Did it?
It really did. The only thing...
Scraped to 1-0.
The only thing that apparently seemed worth reporting on was Phil Jones sung Angels by Robbie Williams with like a karaoke band.
That sounds dreadful.
That does sound horrendous.
And Ryan Giggs' wife turned up, which would have definitely spoiled his evening.
Oh, for fuck.
Oh, sorry, ladies. I'll have to say cheerio. Back in the Premier League, though, Stoke 2, Spurs 1. Spurs on the end of some very poor refereeing decisions.
It was funny, though.
And so Chris Hoy on the end of some awful abuse.
That's right. Unwarranted. Scottish cyclist Chris Hoy being confused with referee Chris Foy.
Oh, God. I take it this was
one letter means so much. But Harry Redknapp did say, I never go and speak to referees after the game. I accept defeat and have never complained about refereeing decisions in 30 years of managing. Never.
All the things Harry claims not to do.
He does.
You wonder what he actually does do. By his book, he doesn't do anything.
Yeah. What have you been doing? Just sitting around?
Yeah.
Well, definitely not looking at other people's players.
What have you been floating in a colourless gel for the last 12 hours, doing nothing?
Where'd you get the gel? Oh, well, the chairman sorts it out.
The chairman pumps my chamber full of colourless gel. Yeah.
What have you been doing this week, Harry? Definitely paying my taxes.
Definitely not rolling my windows down and giving impromptu interviews, thanks. Yeah.
If Redknapp goes to court, so Mr. Redknapp, you know, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. Can you confirm your name? Well, my chairman deals with all that. Probably best to speak to him about it.
He should just wear a little badge that, you know, one of those like little
greeting pads.
Yeah, I'm just saying, hi, I'm Harry, I'm the chairman deals with all that. Because that's all he bloody says. Hmm. He's on Sky Sports so much and he never stops talking about nothing because he has no opinion. He's like,
unless the chairman's like a sort of imaginary friend. In his
Maybe it's like a Tyler Durden situation.
Yeah, allows him to get away with all the bad
and,
shit.
The chairman comes out at night, doesn't file his taxes properly, taps up players. Hello, who's there? It's the chairman. Yeah. Oh, Harry, come on.
Now I'm a lovely little chairman.
No. F off, he's a football manager.
Yeah.
Right. But while we're talking about Stoke, though, good win for them. They have given a trial to a chap called Enoch Balotelli, Mario's brother, 19-year-old Enoch. He made his debut in a reserves game against Burton Albion. Apparently he showed the bit of skill. And a
I
bit
hope
of
they
flair.
Become the new Wallace brothers. That'd be amazing.
they've easily got the potential to do that.
For me, it's Hartlepool United's Corner Hislop, brother of Shaka Hislop, all over again.
All over again, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He has been training with Stoke's youth team for a few weeks, and Dave Cavan, the academy coach, said he's a good boy, a bit raw. We'll see how things go.
Yeah, heard that before.
Trying to eat him.
But what did you boys think? Just going back to the Stoke Spurs game, what did you boys think of the decision? Because I haven't actually seen it.
Absolutely shocking. One of them was Ryan Shawcross on the line. The ball came off his elbow. I mean. It was pretty blatant. And
was that the one where Adebayor was offside after that one?
Yes, and then Adebayor was play carried on. Adebayor was like clearly onside. He put it away. That was disallowed. So there's a penalty shout and a goal wrongly disallowed goal in one incident there. And then not long after that, Dean Whitehead he made a save just in the area. I mean, you could argue he didn't really know. What was happening, but at the same time it was an instinctive good save, if that was the case. I mean, it hit his arms twice, and it's just,
it's shocking really, because I mean the reason it's so annoying from Spurs' point of view is because they've been on such a good run, they've got a game in hand, they're right up there, you know, and that could completely deflate them.
Absolutely.
And Foy, I believe, was the manager that Vyas Boas got fined about the Chelsea QPR game, wasn't he? One or two dodgy decisions there, perhaps. So it's a bit, you wonder whether he's going to be under the spotlight for you after this.
Well, it went the other way around the other season. I forget the exact circumstances, but I think Spurs got some sort of fortunate decisions going their way against Stoke. So
same ref? Oh, right.
What exactly has Scott Parker got over the press? Because they're absolutely loving him at the moment. For me,
he's so English. He's got black boots, shirt tucked in, side parted.
Pulls his socks up.
But he's not... Like, for me, he's played even better for Newcastle and West Ham. I'm not going to say it. North South bias. Bias.
In fairness, he was player of the season last season. So you can.
What I would say to that is, when he was playing for West Ham, he never got that much press, and he was.
He did. He got loads.
Back end,
a one man team.
Yeah, but the Football Writers player of the season is decided sort of February, March time. So that's when he started really getting it.
But what gets me is that everyone's
backlash about the press when he never went to the World Cup, was there? Because if he was so loved, that they would have gone absolutely mental. Yeah, and they should have done.
That was a summer before, though.
Yeah, there was a summer before. So I'm saying not all his time at West Ham he was like that. But I think this season, he's been brilliant for England. You can't deny it.
Yeah, he's been. Yeah, but
he
really
has made a difference. He has made a difference to Spurs.
He was behind Jermaine Jenas for England when he was at Newcastle and Jenas was at Spurs.
Not his fault, that was wrong.
And that was incorrect. I just don't understand. I've seen him play so well for other teams, and I've not seen him play quite so well for Tottenham, and I don't understand why.
Well, I completely disagree with that. I think he's been excellent for Spurs.
I
think he's been good, but I think he's played better for West Ham and Newcastle for me.
The North hate the South, don't they?
Cockney Mafia, isn't it?
But let's go to the North, or the Midlands at least, where West Brom.
Not the North.
Specifically not the North.
I'm offended
if it's Midlands.
I just said the Midlands at least. West Brom is very much in the Midlands.
Yeah, I'm saying. Well, exactly, it's not in the North, is it?
Okay. Well, let's go to the Midlands then, where West Brom lost at home to Wigan, a team from nearly the north.
Isn't there some sort of Premier League clause where Roy Hodgson now has to be sacked?
Roy Hodgson.
Well, yes, because that's what happened with Sunderland. But we said a few weeks ago, if you lose at home to Wigan, you'll probably be sacked. So Roy Hodgson now. Might be sacked now.
Yeah. Moses with a lovely goal.
Great finish.
Lovely.
He's had a few goes at it, to be fair. Yeah. About 50 odd shots about scoring.
He had so little time to get that shot away as well. And he just proper curled it.
Yeah, he did.
Nice.
It's good to see something, sort of a moment of magic from him, because we heard so much about him that he had all this potential. And it was a nuisance all day from what I
can remember. When he signed for Wigan from Palace, and we were all sort of debating whether we thought it was a good decision or not. On one hand, it was a good decision because he'll probably play a lot more, because there was loads of other clubs in for him.
Yeah, big clubs as well.
But in a way, it's almost a little bit of a shame that he's not playing with the greatest respect to Wigan, he's not playing with superb players every week. So you don't know whether he's going to get the development from that point of view. But he's a very, very good athlete, a strong boy as well, and he's obviously not afraid to have a shot and stuff. So we'll see what happens to him, because if Wigan get relegated, he'll move on. I suppose.
But that is fantastic, with two away wins
on the bounce.
This is how Wigan do it, isn't it? They just put these little runs together on the sly and just stay up like a barnacle, as we've explained before.
Do you reckon they'll start this season, then?
They're just unkillable. Maybe they will. I don't know. I mean, sooner or later, you think they will go down, but they've got more staying power than... Or they've got more experience of having to have that staying power than a lot of the other teams down there.
Right, well, let's go there, to the Championship, where Southampton drop points again. They were quite fortunate to get a point against Blackpool at home with a 90th minute equaliser.
They're doing a Forest from last season.
They really are. One of the strangest pieces of commentary I've ever heard was on the BBC website, highlights of this game as well. I'm sure we can post a link to it somewhere. Well, I forget who the commentator was, but Ricky Lambert scored the opening goal, and then sort of just out of nowhere, he kind of becomes like a sort of raster MC, just going, "Ricky Lambert, celebrate!"
He goes, "And Southampton score, and they're off, and Ricky Lambert, celebrate!"
Funky now.
He clearly hasn't done it on purpose. It's just his voice has done something weird without him telling it to.
Maybe he thought he was at the Cave of Funk.
Indeed.
Maybe he did.
West Ham dropping points as well. They lost 3-0 away to Reading. So the top two.
They did go down to 9 men, to be fair.
Yeah, a couple of players sent off,
Points were still dropped.
Yeah, the second sending off, I think it was absolutely pointless. It was,
Collison, wasn't it?
It was Collison. And Jimmy Kibbe, he was taking a piss a bit. He literally pulled his socks up with his feet at the ball. Play. Yeah. And Collison just went over and just pushed him over. Like, sort of clattered into him and then pushed him.
It's
the kind of thing in Brazil where they get so offended when somebody like the Curlon seal.
I presume Curlon's dead now. I've not heard from him in ages.
It's funny how because Collison's he had a really, really promising sort of start to his career. Got that bad injury. Don't know if he's really been the same since then. Andy Bryant was sent off as well, wasn't he, in that game?
They had a bad time. I think maybe that defeat isn't as bad as it looks for West Ham long term when you look at the circumstances.
It was a great weekend for Middlesbrough, though. 1-0 home win against Brighton, moving a couple of points closer to the automatic promotion spot.
You've got a little cluster of teams now who for me now look a bit of a cut above the rest of the division. So you've got Southampton, West Ham,
Middlesbrough,
Leeds,
Cardiff,
and Brighton, maybe Cardiff. Yeah,
Brighton are stuttering as well, though, aren't they?
They look as though they'll be in and out of the playoffs.
Yeah, but I can see them putting a run together, Brighton.
I'd love to see Brighton in the Premier League. It's a nice place,
especially with that new stadium as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But Middlesbrough under Mowbray, I'd quite like to see them up. Playing some better football, as Mowbray's teams tend to do.
Bring them all up.
Come on. A great win for Ipswich away to Barnsley. 5-3, Paul's Jewel. Yeah. Paul Jewel's men with an
Paul's Jewel.
Isn't that a video? Isn't that a video online somewhere?
Yeah. Moving swiftly on, yeah.
What a slip of the... Arsenal-esque win, 5-3 away. Great win for the Tractor Boys, desperately need the points. So well done to them in League One. Huddersfield, of course, recently broke the Football League record with their 43 game unbeaten run. It lost two games on the bounce.
Happened to Arsenal when they lost their 49 game unbeaten run. I think it's the pressure coming off.
I just think it's Lee Clark watching what Newcastle are doing.
Well, they lost away to Charlton the other week, which is tricky with Charlton, obviously top of the league, but they also lost at home to mid-table Bournemouth, and they've slipped to fourth place. MK Dons a point ahead of them, and Megson Sheffield Wednesday have gone into second place.
Well, that's another little fact is that when Gary Megson was sacked from Bolton,
yeah.
I believe he got 19 points from his last 20 games.
The Megson pointometer wasn't very kind.
But he got 19 from 20 games and then was sacked. Now, Aaron Cole's got 9 points from 20 games.
Yeah.
And Megson's going great guns at Wednesday. They're doing well. They're not. They play off the big man a lot Wednesday.
Yep.
They'll lump it up to the big man up front, and it's not great to watch, as you would probably imagine.
You know, as we've said before, Benito,
he'll suckle the joy out of it, but you'll get results. And he'll probably get them out of division in a similar way to Allardyce playing negative tactics even at home. We'll still probably get them promoted, you know.
Well, now we go to the SPL, where Rangers beat Hibs 2-0 away from home. Jelovic with a brace. I watched this game, and Craig Burley had a very odd rant.
I meant to ask you about that. What did he say?
Very strange, because one of the Rangers players got fouled. Edu fouled one of the Hibs players.
Yeah.
It was probably a fair tackle, but it was a nothing incident. It never led to anything. It wasn't like a free kick on the edge of the box. Certainly wasn't a penalty, nothing like that. And Craig Burley just sort of said, well, it's a decent challenge, and the referee gives it a foul, and you wonder why people get frustrated. And then he just went, yeah, I bet all his mates are refs, aren't they? Imagine having a day out with them, that would be a barrel of laughs, wouldn't it? And then he went, what do they do of an evening? Go for a bit of dinner, get the whistles out, have a little blow.
Barrel of laughs.
Wow. Craig Burley is Michael Douglas from Falling.
Yeah. Wow. It was so sitting there. I rewound it about 5 times just to actually make sure he said that.
God.
It was so strange. So strange. And then he said, very pretentious, aren't they, referees?
With their whistles and their dinners.
Oh, look at you with your whistle and your black outfit.
What does he do of an evening?
So, yeah, exactly.
Get him in a disco.
Yeah.
So very, very strange. Oh dear. Celtic, though, kept the pressure up with Rangers with a 1-0 home win against Hearts.
So who's in the title race for the season?
Rangers, Celtic. Well, Motherwell beat Five Flying St Johnstone 3-0.
Yeah, Rangers and Celtic.
And you can never write off Aberdeen.
The Celtic goal was an absolute just beauty of a goal. Yeah. It was just from a sort of like, almost like a free kick, you know, when players just have no kind of like back
I
forget the guy's name. I think it was a defender as well. Just absolutely battered it into the top corner.
Oh, go to the wire, that one. It'll definitely be one of three in Scotland.
We won
the
Aberdeen, put it that way.
In La Liga, we had the big one, El Clásico. Mm.
Which is Spanish for the classic.
It is. Just to clear that up once and for all.
Yeah, don't ever say this is not an educational show.
Real Madrid 1, Barcelona 3. Xavi Hernandez said, we were very superior.
You've got to wonder what Mourinho's got to do, because...
They scored in like... It's like they gave them a goal. They scored in like after like 30 seconds.
Valdes did almost literally give them a goal.
Yeah.
And Mourinho's Madrid have won 15 in a row into that game, had they?
Yeah, they're very good run.
Yeah. And you sort of think that was...
They were the favourites. But just like Ronaldo missing like a point-blank header, you just sort of think, that is bread and butter and salt on it.
Well, Ronaldo was given a lot of stick from Marca because he obviously missed the headers, as you say, Pete. And in the first half, would it have been for 2-0? Well, certainly been for 2-1 or 2-0. He shot it wide when perhaps he could have put someone in.
He's got a bit about him like that, and it does very, very often come down to, remember Messi made a difference a while back in a sort of very attritional game.
Yeah.
And you often think if it came down, if they both work very hard, they're really fit teams and they can run all day. If it just comes down to the standout player in their team, you'd back Messi over Ronaldo because he makes the right decisions.
It's the decision maker.
We've said like a million times how many times that Ronaldo tries to just do everything himself. Yeah. Mm. It's just, you know,
he did that for United in the Champions League final.
That's right.
Yes.
And he completely ruined it for them in Rome when you guys went to the game. And it was his last sort of swan song at United, wasn't it? Pretty much. And
which may be harsh to say ruined it for them, because Barcelona
was shooting from 40 yards out.
But he nullified himself.
Yeah,
basically, he took his own ability out of the game by just trying to do everything with it and just not bringing his teammates into it. It was like Barcelona against Man United featuring Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah. It was. No, you're absolutely right.
That's right. Well, Marca, as I said, were very harsh to Ronaldo. They're saying, you know, the club are going to have to bribe him so that he behaves like a footballer and not a child, and suggesting that he's thinking of the Ballon d'Or rather than passing to his teammates.
Yeah. Well, Messi was quite lucky to not be sent off in that game. See, he was booked, and then he had a foul that was... probably a booking.
No, I'm
quite
not
soon
sure.
After that. But the ref went for his card.
I know.
Realised he booked him before that and changed his mind. You could see that happen.
And
in my book, that's lucky, regardless of whether the...
Okay, fair enough.
I'll take your point.
Messi was given an awful lot of room at times by Madrid, which was quite surprising, and he exploited that when he set up Sanchez superbly for the first goal. It was a brilliant first goal.
Yeah.
And you, I mean, you looked at that Barcelona side, they didn't have a forward on the pitch. You know, and Alexis Sanchez, very much a winger, was their striker.
Yeah, Fabregas was on the left point of the front three. Well,
Villa's been struggling.
But that Barcelona changed their formation, I don't know how many times throughout. You know, Busquets dropping centre-back and all sorts. But that's why I love that football that they play is because there's so much going on, tactics. It's not just, right, take the big man, boom, boom. You know,
it's the system.
Guardiola's constantly, right, they've just done that, right, you go there, boom, you know, he's changing it up.
I liked it when Piqué fell into the crowd, and it's only when footballers get measured against members of the crowd when you realise how big they are.
Yeah.
Piqué, he looked like, I don't know, he looked like a big man.
I've interviewed Vincent Kompany. He's absolutely terrifying. He's massive. So big.
Mertes like a 6'6", and I can't get that in my head, you know.
That's basketball height.
It's crazy, isn't it? And Thierry Henry's a big guy, so he just looks like a sort of normal sized footballer on TV. Well, but huge.
We can measure ourselves to him now, can't we?
What do you think? Do you think Madrid will really struggle because of that result now?
Because
it must be so soul destroying for them.
Well, yeah, it must be, but they've still got the game in hand. I think what Mourinho's done now is that he's made them into a side that will beat everybody else. It will. I mean, I know you could argue that last season as well, but he's got closer. I mean, I quite fancy Madrid for the Champions League actually this season, and they were perhaps unlucky last year. But the one thing that I was maybe going to suggest, and it's far easier said than done, when you've got a player like Messi. I know he roams all over the place, but I'd be tempted.
Do a Keown on him.
Well, yeah, put Pepe on him.
Yeah, man. But Pepe tried that, kicked the absolute shit out of him, and almost got sent off, didn't he?
No, but that's right.
That was on Villa that he got sent off, wasn't it?
Yeah, but he did a job on him.
So many yellow cards in that match.
Well, that was the Champions League last season.
Yeah.
And it was only when Pepe got sent off did Messi then have the room and then score the two
goals. But I wonder if Pepe's got the discipline or not.
And well, it's like, if you take Messi out of it, there's still exceptional individuals in that team. And what I think is really impressive about Barcelona and the way they keep regenerating, because it feels like this is the same side since the one that won the Champions League in 2009. Just feels like they've tweaked it here and there, and it's fundamentally the same one. But you look
it
at
really
the players, you know, absolutely not. You look at the players that scored in the El Clásico. I mean, Xavi's goal was a bit of a freak one as well, but it's Sanchez and Fabregas. It's the players they brought in. They've just slotted in immediately, and the system's doing its job.
And Real's got Diarra, so enjoyable.
Exactly. Elsewhere, though, in La Liga, Valencia had the chance to move closer to the top two, but they lost away to Betis.
Whatever curse is on La Liga means that, you know, no team will be able to do that. You won't be able to bridge that.
That's right. But it was the you know, playing away in Seville against Betis, and two injury time goals from Real Betis, and it was great scenes. You know, when they were surprised to equalise, because they're not doing that well, Betis, and they certainly wouldn't have expected to beat Valencia.
Yeah.
And then when the second went in, it was one of those games where people were like, "Oh, I'm so glad I was there." You know,
was it? Yeah.
And off they went. Now we will finish up by going to Romania. In the land of the ridiculous football owner, they have had a poll to see who is the most popular male celebrity in the country. Guess who won?
Bacali.
He did indeed.
Worryingly, Bacali. The man's politics are questionable at best.
In his head, that means he's president now.
Yeah.
I don't want to see what that man's got in his dungeon.
Oh my God. And he will have a series of dungeons.
Yeah. There'll be secret dungeons within the dungeon.
Do you mean the basement, Gigi? No, the dungeon.
Yeah, there's people who work in the dungeons who don't know about the other dungeons.
Yeah.
But anyway, Stoia's, because he's Stoia Bucharest owner, Gigi Becali. Now, their rivals Dynamo were a bit cheeky to old Gigi recently, as they put images of him surrounded by sheep on their big screen at their ground. This is because Becali was a shepherd before becoming a filthy rich football club owner. And Becali,
how do you make that leap?
There's money in wool, Jim.
Well, it wasn't for Woolworths, though, was it? Now, Becali was none too pleased about this, as you can imagine, and he responded by saying, "You know who owns Dynamo? A communist gypsy and a man who sleeps with men. Yeah, sure, I was a shepherd. I milk the sheep. I like the sheep. Get over it. I'd rather milk sheep than do men."
If you sort of cut that down, communist, gypsy, and a gay man. Not really insults.
Yeah, exactly.
In the West, it seems.
One's a political stance, one's sexual orientation, and the other one's perhaps
ethnicity. Yeah.
So he's being horrifically offensive
across the board.
One thing I will say is, I maintain my on one perverse level, my admiration for the amount of maximum offence caused in the littlest time possible.
Yeah, it's very efficient. Oh, it? Very yeah. concise. Yeah.
Well, it's not like a Tory MP going on a stag do or something and finding himself in, you know, a compromising situation. Yeah. It is like, fuck off, everyone. Yeah.
Maybe that's why he's so popular. He's so entertaining.
Yeah. He's Jeremy Clarkson. He's
Well, the Dynamo owner, the Dynamo owner replied by saying, "I'm totally heterosexual." He sounds like an American I'm totally heterosexual, isn't it?
Yeah. Up next on MTV, I'm totally heterosexual. Yeah. And no music ever.
Isn't that a fella called Dragos? It sounds like he's good in Game of Thrones or something.
It's a good name. I think twice about insulting a man called Dragos.
Gagos.
Good one, Jimbo. And now it's time for Going for Gold.
Going for Gold. Gold. Oh, it's Going for Gold. People. Luke's running ahead with the points in tour. I won last week because you're all three are idiots and that. So I now have 2 points, which I'm terrifically excited about.
7-5-4-2.
Yeah.
A great formation.
Shall we go for our first clue, lads?
Yes.
My father was a footballer for Bristol Rovers.
Nothing.
Nah.
I scored an own goal in an FA Cup final to gift the opposition the trophy.
Stop. Oh, go on.
Des Walker.
No.
Damn! Stop. Gary Mabbott.
Oh,
fair play. Yeah.
Damn it.
Good one.
You wee beauty.
I didn't even get to the bloody... I injected an orange with chemicals on Blue Peter.
Oh, why didn't you put that first?
That was...
I was once on the TV show The Queen's Nose.
Yeah, I definitely would have got on that. Definitely, I saw that.
Never
Did
mind.
You? Yeah.
I don't even remember that.
Gary Mabbott, celebrity insulin injector, now working with.
I was going to go for Walker first. Yeah.
He's now working with Street Child World Cup.
So, yeah, he was big. He was big in South Africa for the World Cup. That's right.
A bloody good man.
Yes. He was. Yeah. Shall we have an email? Shall we?
Thank you for your
email,
lady.
Yeah. Yes, we shall. Now then.
I like that.
Jimmy Savile from Beyond the Grave.
Indeed. I ventured to Sweden for a few days for a smorgasbord and a spendrups. Could still be Jimmy Savile.
Jimmy Savile
from Beyond the Grave.
That's not his name, Jimmy'll Fix It.
Yeah, I don't know. Needless to say, what with the release of Zlatan's autobiography in time for Christmas, his face is everywhere.
Good.
Which can only be a good thing. Mm. With zero to no knowledge of the Swedish language, I had to plump for the picture section. The first picture, you ask? Double page spread of Zlatan's bare feet is all. Well, what he can do with an orange. My favourite picture, though, isn't of Zlatan's wife, the beautiful Helena Seger, nor the one with him happily embracing Pep, nor the one of him hugging the air out of Pele's lungs. My favourite is about three. This is amazing. My favourite is about three from the end. Zlatan casually sprawled across his bed, eyes wide shut, with a huge fucking gun. True Zlatan style.
Doesn't he go hunting quite a lot?
Yeah, he's big into his guns.
I do not know.
He had a party. It might have been when he was at Inter, but could have been the Swedish national team. I forget. But he went out and they had a big party and they ate like a boar that he had.
I
killed.
Think it was a Swedish national team.
That's from Billy Stone, who ends with Zlatan, man, footballer, gun nut, legend. And I think we all agree with him on that one, Billy Stone.
Cheers, Stonesy.
From my cold, dead, orange-coloured hands.
Yeah.
I've got an email, lads.
Okay.
Ooh. It's from a man called Damien Smith from Hampshire, he says.
Okay.
Dear Ramblers, regarding your competition for the Hurricane FC shirt, I can't think of a more worthy cause to donate such a piece of sporty memorabilia than to my good self.
He's got it.
Bit biased.
With Christmas fast approaching and knowing full well that my beloved wife will not be purchasing me any football merchandise for the big day, I'd be most appreciative of being able to stick the shirt on just to show her that there are people out there who do believe football isn't just for Saturdays, it's for life and Christmas too. Mrs. Smith is a firm believer that Christmas is all about crap DVDs and gifts that will only hold entertainment value for the festive period. The time has come for change, and the Hurricane FC shirt would surely prove to my wonderful wife that football is permanent. Yours in football, Damien Smith. Oh, wives are rubbish, aren't they?
I hope your wife's not listening.
Yeah.
She's not listening.
No, she's not. Yeah. Like football.
He's got himself the shirt, though.
We'll get the Hurricane shirt out to you, sir.
And now it's time for a profile. And what do we have today? It's a stadium. And we haven't done... We've only got one stadium in.
The Azteca.
And we've got loads of players now.
Exactly. So
we haven't got football
room
in yet. No. Can we do that next week?
Yeah.
We need a home and away. venue.
Is it Fratton Park?
It is Fratton Park. Yeah. It is the Maracanã in Rio de Janeiro.
A big one.
A big one indeed.
In both capacity.
Some say that Wembley is the home of football, but then others... Well, it is the home of football. Yeah. When others say the Maracanã is the spiritual home of football.
Yeah.
Mainly Brazilians, I would hasten to add. The official name of the stadium is not actually the Maracanã.
It's not just the district it's in or something?
It's kind of the district it's in. It's also the name of a species of parrot, which is from that region.
Obviously.
Obviously. The official name of the stadium is the Estadio Journalist... The Adidas Tango Arena.
Those bastards.
The Cave of Samba.
Any of the above, really. The official name of the stadium is the Estadio Giornalista Mario Filho. And it was named, renamed this in the 60s after the death of the popular journalist and writer Mario Filho.
That's huge for a journalist.
Imagine that. Yeah,
Jesus.
Well, he was quite an influential writer.
Imagine the Wembley Stadium being named the Henry Winter Stadium.
The Gary Bushell stand within it. It was just like...
Well, yeah, he was one of the main champions of the stadium's construction, and he also coined the phrase for the Fluminense and Flamengo derby, the Flu-Fla derby. Mm. And they love all that out there.
Not a massive leap, though, is it?
Well, yeah, but it was like in the 20s, you know.
What, before people could speak?
Can I coin the... Middlesbrough-Madrid match?
Mid-mad.
Not a derby, though, is it?
Well, if they play in Europe... Mid-match.
And it's fiercely contested.
Well, maybe in the future there could be something in that.
Move on.
Back to the Maracanã.
The largest stadium in South America regularly hosts matches involving the big four teams in Rio de Janeiro: Botafogo, Flamengo, Fluminense and Vasco.
That would be brilliant. Could you imagine if like Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs and West Ham all shared a stadium?
Well, it's not so much sharing,
like,
a stadium.
They all played at Wembley.
They often play there in the Rio
let's
State.
Let's not revisit Arsenal playing at National Stadium again.
Actually, no, that would be rubbish.
Where Batistuta almost killed Arsenal to death.
Forever.
Anyway, the first match ever played at the stadium was on June 16th, 1950.
17 years before the Summer of Love.
Yeah.
That was the World Cup, wasn't it?
Well, it was just before the World Cup, actually. But you're right in saying...
It was open for the 1950 World Cup. Wasn't it?
He's effectively wrong in saying that.
Well, no, the first competitive match was the 1950 World Cup. And that was a game between a Rio All-Stars team and a Sao Paulo All-Stars team, with Dwarf inductee Didi scoring the first ever goal at the stadium in a 3-1 win for the Rio All-Stars. But the stadium was really built as a showpiece for the 1950 World Cup finals hosted in Brazil. We have profiled this tournament.
Didn't really pan out, I'd hoped.
Well, we have profiled this tournament, so I implore you to go to the website and check that out. But nevertheless, Brazil built the stadium to be the biggest football stadium in the world, and they started working on it in 1948 with more than 10,000 men on the job. When the capacity... you can't see what Luke's doing right now. When the capacity was completed, it was 43,000 more than the previous biggest football stadium, which I think was Hampden.
I thought you were going to say they'd like made 43,000 extra seats by accident.
No,
it's
not Wembley.
Exactly. I think 43,000 extra people turned up by accident though on a number of occasions. Yeah. Now, when the Maracanã opened, a Brazilian newspaper said, "Today Brazil has the biggest and best stadium in the world. Now we have a truly fantastic setting where the whole world can admire our sporting grandeur and prowess."
Well, stadiums are a massive, massive deal in Brazil. Having a stadium in your neighbourhood that's big is a real point of pride for the whole community. And it's not
something everyone has. Yeah, satellite dish, stadium.
No, but they do see it like that as sort of it is a point of local pride. So on a national level, that would be absolutely huge in Brazil, and you can see why they sort of have so much pride in the American Army.
Especially back then when you didn't have the mass media, so people would know less about them.
Mm. But you've been there, haven't you?
I have been there, yes. But the stadium, as we said, was built for the 1950 World Cup and it didn't quite pan out. But the first match they did play at the stadium, a competitive one, they beat Mexico 4-0. And that was their opening game of the 1950 World Cup. And before the game, there was a 21-gun salute and 5,000 pigeons were released.
Nice.
Pigeons first, shots afterwards, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Absolute chaos.
I read when it was opened, it was actually, the FIFA said that you could use it for the World World Cup, and it didn't have any toilets.
Well, that's right. It wasn't quite completed.
Or a press box.
Yeah, hopefully it's right.
It wasn't finished.
Well, it was in the sense of you could go and watch football there, but
you just
Pete
couldn't
says,
urinate.
You couldn't. Yeah, if you were in the press and you wanted to piss, then you were up a gum tree.
Up a gum tree.
Yeah.
That's a great saying.
Thanks, man. So for the final of the 1950 World Cup, or final match. It's kind of open to interpretation that wasn't an official final, but the final game. Again, go and see the profile on the website. Mm. We did the 1950 World Cup. So the final match was in front of an official crowd of 174,000. However, former FIFA president Yao Avalanche said that he said there were some 220,000 people in the stadium.
Yeah, I definitely read. I mean, because James and I both read the history of Brazilian football, and
Alex Bellos,
they do say that, you know, to be honest, they're very, very liberal with that sort of thing.
That's right. The official record attendance that the stadium has hosted was at 183,000 in 1969.
But I love how with all of these attendance things with American art, it's official and estimated, but the estimate's like official as well.
Yeah.
It's like the people that paid and the people that were there.
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, that going back to the 1950 final, it's 174,000 or 220,000. Yeah. It's not like 174 and 190.
Big difference.
Yeah, which is still actually a massive goal as well.
It's 1969, is that when Pelé scored his 1,000th goal?
I'm not sure if it was that particular one. But
that was in 69.
But that was in 69, yeah, when the American Isle witnessed the alleged 1,000th goal of Pelé's career.
Mm. Absolute chaos.
Oh, my goodness. Well, he was fouled in, I think it was Pelé. He was fouled in the box, and he took the resulting penalty, putting it past the keeper. And then every journalist in Brazil ran on the pitch and mobbed him in the goal.
Yeah. And they played against Vasco, didn't they? He scored that. All the press came on, started taking photos in the middle of the game, and then they just put him up on their shoulders, like carrying him back to the centre circle.
Well, he did a lap of honour, didn't he?
In the middle of the game.
In a game, and it turned out as well. I think he scored his 1,000th goal three games before that. three goals before that.
Nice. The funny thing is, though, all this celebrating is going on. You watch the clip, and in your head you think, oh, they've just won the league. That was like the last game. Yeah. That was in the 34th minute. Everyone forgot that they had a game to play. The rest of it wasn't even like right near your half time. In 1989, there was another goal-scoring feat achieved. Zico scored his 333rd goal at the stadium for Flamengo.
God, that's brilliant.
That's and crazy.
That's the record at that stadium, isn't it?
It is the record at that stadium, yeah.
That's a lot of goals.
Well, I think Flamengo played in the stadium at the time.
Even so, though.
Oh, it's incredible.
That's ridiculous.
Zico.
Yeah.
You know. 1983, when Garrincha died, his remains were brought to the stadium and thousands of fans came out and paid their respects to the Brazilian great. 1984, England visited
Johnny Barnes,
the American in a friendly match.
Jean Barnet,
and we bloody won 2-0.
2-0, yeah. I think that's the only time we've beaten.
Do you know what the other one?
No, I don't.
Mark Hatley.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, but John Barnes with I'd say one of the greatest England goals ever.
Yeah. Magnificent solo run weaving
Slalom
through the Brazilian defence. How often do you say that?
in Brazil.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Never did it again.
Will Phil Jones be doing that in 2014?
Fingers crossed.
Let's not answer that just yet. In 1992, there was a tragic accident at the American Isle when a part of the upper stand collapsed and killed a number of supporters and injured a few. And this led to the stadium being converted into an all-seater, which, of course, reduced the capacity, but very much improved the safety.
But the size of that, I mean, it says like an entire stand went and three people were killed. It's how the hell that they got away with that?
Yeah.
What sort of state was it in when you visited it?
Well, look, when I went there, it's in two tiers.
Yeah.
And I think the current capacity is 82,000.
Was it disrepair or was it?
Well, the bottom tier was being done.
Right.
So the top tier was all there. But it's a weird stadium. It goes back rather than up.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's that tall for a stadium of such capacity.
Compared to the new council,
Even like Wembley, it's quite tall, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it kind of goes back. You
You're
know,
quite a long way away from the pitch.
You are a little bit, I mean, it's a special stadium, obviously. The history is just breathtaking, you know. But
it was built a long time ago. You wouldn't want to put undue pressure by building up, and you know.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's it. Yeah.
Well, they are redeveloping it now, aren't they?
Yeah, it's had a number of facelifts over the years, and even quite recently as well. Well, like, hence I was there only a few
it's
years ago.
It's hosting a lot of sporting events coming up. It's got the Confederations Cup, the World Cup,
the Olympics in Brazil as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It also hosted the FIFA Club World Cup.
Oh, that was two Brazilian teams played, didn't
they? In 2000, yes.
Is that when Beckham got sent off?
Beckham got sent off at the Maracanã against Necaxa, the Mexican side. And I think it was the opening game, or one of the opening games of the tournament, certainly. And then
such a thug.
And Corinthians beat rivals Vasco da Gama in the final. Remember when Vasco turned United over 3-1 and hammered them?
Edmundo was incredible that game.
Edmundo scored what Craig Brown described as the greatest goal I've ever seen.
Craig Brown sounds like a nan in your world.
Did he spin Gary Neville? Was it Gary Neville? He spun it.
Yeah,
spun
he
someone.
Spin?
To be fair, Craig Brown, that's like a grandmother normally.
Yeah. It might have been Nicky Butt, mate.
Okay, it was a great turn anyway.
Yeah, I think Butt scored the United goal, actually. No, it could have been Nicky Butt. Anyway, whoever it was a great goal. Next door to the Maracanã is the Maracanãzinho, which is, of course, a smaller stadium by...
That's its son.
The name, yeah.
Very promising stadium.
20,000 there. But in 2014, the Maracanã will become only the second stadium to have hosted two World Cup finals. Although, like we said, you can argue that perhaps the previous one wasn't the final, it was the final match, etc., etc. Yeah. But it's
What's
treated...
the other one, the Azteca?
The Azteca.
70 and 86.
Mm. Yes. But the Maracanã, the 50 final is treated like it is the final, so it will go down in history books as one of two stadiums. But, you know, you think about that stadium... just so many great players have graced their
so
pitch.
Much history as
Ronaldo,
well.
Ronaldo, Romario, Socrates, Zico, Cafu, Pele, Rivellino,
well, pretty much any Brazilian player.
Ronaldinho, Zico.
Yeah. So many pitch inversions.
Yeah. But it is incredible. Like being in, you know, went for a stadium tour and all, and you go in the tunnel up to the pitch, and you look in the tunnel and you just think, there's been some players walk down here. Yeah. You know, like, imagine being in the tunnel looking around saying, oh, there's Roberto Carlos behind me, Ronaldinho, we're going to be okay today.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, but my favourite thing I saw in the stadium was I saw a couple of games and there was a guy who I could see him at the other side of the stadium. He was running around and there's a guy dressed as Batman for some reason, and it was empty where he was and he was just pegging around, just running
just
around.
They allow just, that sort
like,
of thing.
Yeah. With the old cape giving it plenty.
What you been doing today? Just been running around the stadium dressed as Batman.
Yeah. It was as simple as that.
What was the game like? Don't know.
It was absolutely magnificent scenes. But we'll end from a quote from the great man Pele. He said, the Maracanã is a special place for all Brazilians, but especially me. It was there I scored my first goal for Brazil against Argentina, and where I scored my 1,000th professional goal years later. Some 1,700 people have played on that pitch, and the aura of the place is extraordinary. In comes the Maracanã, ladies and gentlemen.
I know that one.
I have a construction job to get that in there.
Let's hope they get it complete by the time this podcast comes out.
Yeah.
Right then, that is the end of the Football Ramble. If you want to get in touch, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com, and the website is thefootballramble.com, Jim.
Yes, go over to the website, thefootballramble.com, for all kinds of blogs, a sort of like ramble pick live previews where you can win actual money playing live fantasy football. There's the Dean Windass Hall of Fame, there's the retro ramble where Andy Brassel or James Horncastle take a look back at sort of a classic match. There's the forum, there's the shop if you want to stay warm, as we've explained so many times, it's important to have clothes on your back. So yeah, just get over there, thefootballramble.com.
Check out the 1950 profile of the 1950 World Cup we did. There we have it. Right, say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
I love you.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And I love you too. Cheery bye.
Southampton in front. Ricky Lambert celebrate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.